India and Pakistan swelter in a record-breaking heat wave. Hundreds of millions are endangered by intense temperatures. As everyone tries to keep cool, there's electricity blackouts because power stations can't cope. How much is climate change to blame? And what can be done to reduce the impact? This is Inside Story. Welcome to the program. I'm Derin Abugaidab. Scientists have long warned that climate change will lead to more intense weather, such as heat waves, floods and cyclones. Many point to record-breaking temperatures now in India and Pakistan as proof. Indians sweltered in the hottest March for 122 years. And this month, many cities recorded temperatures above 40 degrees for days on end. Although heat waves are common in the region, they don't usually start until May or June. In Pakistan, meteorologists say temperatures are at least 8 degrees higher than average. They could soar to 48 degrees next week in parts of Sindh province.
We have to go outside to work. It's very hot. Even the water we carry becomes too hot to drink. We don't even have enough water.
For the first time it has happened. Temperatures have gone very high and it's really scorching. And I don't know what is going to come in the next few months.
We have come to bathe with the children because it is very hot. This is the only way to beat the heat. What else is there to do? It is so warm already in this month. It's already this warm in the beginning of summer. What will happen later? We're here to beat the heat.
While the intense heat has increased demand for electricity, leading to power outages in both countries, some power stations in India only have a day's worth of coal in reserve. The government cancelled 600 passenger train services to prioritize fuel shipments. Electricity blackouts are expected at hospitals and to stop metro station services in Delhi. Well, the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change says India must drastically cut greenhouse gases to avoid devastating weather events. At the COP26 conference in Glasgow last year, Prime Minister Narendra Modi promised to achieve net zero emissions by 2070. India, along with China, were accused of watering down the final agreement's commitments to phase out coal. Let's bring in our guests who are all in India. Joining us is Aruna Chandrasekhar, a journalist at Carbon Brief. That's a website dedicated to news on climate and energy policy. She's joining us from Mumbai. In Pune, Roxy Matthew Cole is a climate scientist at the Indian Institute of Tropical Meteorology. And in New Delhi is Madhura Joshi, who's a senior associate at the climate change think tank E3G. Warm welcome to each of you. Thanks so much for your time with us on Inside Story. Roxy Matthew Cole, this year, as we've been reporting, has been particularly hot, particularly early. How concerning is this heat wave, not only because of its timing, but its spread as well?
Yeah, there is no running away from the heat waves, right? No easy way to adapt, and it covers a large region. For the Indo-Pakistan region, it's starting from the northwest Pakistan to northwest India to Rajasthan, Gujarat, and then to central India and north India to parts of southeast India and east India, like states like Odisha and Andhra Pradesh and Telangana. It's a large region obliquely from Pakistan that's being covered by these heat waves. And the particular aspect of this heat wave is that it has been here for quite a long time. And we see that with global warming, the frequency, not only the frequency of these heat waves, but their intensity and duration and the area covered by these heat waves are increasing. And if you look at the data from the Indian Met Department, we see that the March, that is the last month, March of 2022, was the hottest year for India in the instrumental records in the last 122 years. And April is not behind. April shows a similar signature with some of the hottest temperatures.
Right.
Temperatures,
okay, let me ask you this, Roxy. Since you bring up some statistics, I mean, last year's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report found heat waves globally had become more intense and more frequent, with high confidence that human activity was to blame. But in this particular case, what we're seeing across the region, is there any specific research or evidence that you've seen attributing the recent heat to global warming, or is it too early to tell? What do you put this heat wave down to?
Well, if you want to dissect each and every event with global warming, it may need in-depth research and attribution, but we have clear signature for this Indo-Pac region. And the data and the statistics clearly show, and our research to clearly show this from the Ministry of Earth Sciences, they have shown a clear trend in the intensity, frequency, and duration of these heat waves and attributed it to global warming.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Let's bring in Aruna into the discussion. So, Aruna, what's your take on this? I mean, what do you put this down to? To what extent is the heat wave currently experienced in the region exacerbated by climate change?
In terms of attribution, there various different climate scientists and research have pointed to a very clear climate change signature, the heat waves that India is currently experiencing, and the fact that these are staying a while and they're much more frequent. A lot of this is also, India is not, and this region is not necessarily a country of or a region of denialists, because this is very lived experience. Speak to anybody in the street and they would say that they haven't seen these kinds of temperatures in the months of March and April. But there are other factors as well. For instance, again, looking at incredible developmental activities. But I mean, there is a clear climate signal, and therefore big emitters, it's a sign to that we need to be acting now. This is India at 1.1°C. We are due to see up to 3.5°C towards the end of the century if we continue on our current emissions trajectory.
Okay, I think my two panelists so far are in agreement that climate change has a big role to play here. But Madhura, let's bring you in. And I know that you've done a lot of work on the coal in the country. So to what extent do you think that domestic factors are playing a role in India? Because, of course, it's deeply dependent on fossil fuels to power its economy. So how much of a role is that playing in what we're seeing taking place right now in India?
What I would actually like to focus on is the impact of the heat wave on the power sector. So we are definitely seeing a huge power shortage, and it's been a combination of multiple factors. Of course, the high dependence of coal in the electricity sector, about 53% of the electricity mix is currently on coal. And there have been several supply shortages, and there have been a range of different reasons for the supply shortages. A spike in demand because of the heat waves, national and international supply disruptions. There have been some policy issues and non-payment of dues by power distribution companies. Hence, they're not been able to afford the coal. If I was to just delve into this a little bit more, as was pointed out earlier, the heat waves have, the temperatures in March and April have basically broken all records. And this, coupled with opening up the economy post the pandemic, has definitely led to a much higher demand spike than was seen previously. Demand has been rising at the fastest pace in nearly four decades. And this has constrained the ability of the power plants to build up the stock of supply. The supply for sort of coal has also been disrupted, both because of international and domestic reasons. Internationally, coal price volatility has been really high. And even last year, in about September and October, India had seen power shortages, again, due to domestic and international power supply disruptions. Export bans by countries such as Indonesia, which was there last year, as well as in February this year, and extreme weather-linked supply disruptions internationally.
Right. I wonder if you can just tell us about some of the steps that the government has taken to alleviate this crisis when it comes to the increase in power has left India, as you've been saying, scrambling for coal, and we're seeing some rationing taking place in several states. Just tell us more about what the government has done and whether it's enough.
Sure. So one of the first things that the government had done was lifted the import ban. There was a directive in December to reduce imports and keep them to bare minimum absolute essentials. So that has been reversed. However, the really high international coal prices does become a challenge. There is a directive to the states to try and increase the coal availability. their states have also been asked to look for long-term coal supplies internationally and look for the best possible deal where it's available, as well as increasing in railway transportation, because that's also been a bottleneck since the demand has spiked so much. But these are very short-term measures. From a long-term perspective, I think there is a stronger case and a rationale for moving away from coal, reducing the dependence on coal, and investing more in cleaner energy sources, which face some less fewer of these supply disruptions, at least not in the generation stage.
Okay, and speaking of cleaner energy, let me bring in Roxy. Roxy, because India is making the shift to cleaner energy with an ambitious target that was announced to draw 40% of its installed electric power from non-fossil fuels by the year 2030. That is something that was announced by the Prime Minister. But where do you think India stands on its climate commitments? Is it on track to meet them? And is it on the right track, in fact?
Well, I would say that from where we were in terms of solar energy power or clean energy, we are coming a long way. But like any other countries, India also have made a strong commitment, a large commitment, and we need to strive a bit more stronger in that way. But I would say none of the countries, whether it is US, Europe, or the other countries like China, commitments from any of these countries are not sufficient enough to keep the temperatures below 1.5 degrees Celsius by 2040 or below 2 degrees Celsius by 2060. So on a global level itself, we need to work together to enhance our commitments and enhance our investments in green energy so that we can bring the carbon dioxide emissions to lower levels so that these heat waves and global temperatures don't shoot up. Because what we are seeing so far is a response to that 1 degree Celsius. And we see that by 2 degrees Celsius, we can't even imagine the heat waves and the floods and the cyclones that we might see in the future, in the near future, within the next 2 decades.
Right, but just one more to you before I move on to Aruna. I mean, when Modi says that India will reduce the emissions intensity of its economy by 45%, you don't think that that is likely, that it'll actually have an impact on limiting overall emissions? So what you're saying is you want the government to be doing more?
Yeah, all governments. Because whether it is heat wave or any other extreme weather event, the response is from carbon dioxide emissions. And carbon dioxide have this property, it's well spread. So no matter whether India emits or China emits or US or Europe emits, the impact is felt everywhere. And the carbon emissions, they trap this solar energy, and we will have the impacts everywhere. So we need a global level action, global level commitment, binding commitment, so as to reduce these carbon emissions.
Okay, Aruna, do you agree with this, that this needs to be more of a global issue? I mean, we do see conferences like the Paris conference and so on and so forth. But in terms of India, you know, a lot of people say, well, its share of global greenhouse gas emissions, in fact, is significantly lower than countries that Roxy was just mentioning, like the US and like China. So is India paying for the excesses of the developed world, do you think?
India is paying for the excesses. So in terms of historical responsibility, big emitters, big polluters, those who aren't doing their fair share. And there's a long list. They may be promises at COP, and of course, that they are decarbonizing their own economies. And of course, I think now the war in Ukraine has also really actually exposed the sort of fossil fuel dependency of the Western world. And we're seeing how those shifts are happening. And at the same time, we are looking at a country where India has an incredibly ambitious pledge on paper, but it doesn't really necessarily add up, because at the same time, the last 9 years have seen extensive environmental deregulation. More and more coal mines have been put on the auction block. We're also not necessarily seeing the rationale for the sort of shortage that is being seen year on year, where at the same time we have record amounts of production, but at the same time there seems to be a crunch at power plants which justify more imports. So it seems to be feeding into a cycle where the hotter it gets, the more the demand. And of course, this has also been cited as something which is economic growth. And yes, India does have its fair share of the carbon budget. But at the same time, we have been seeing as well of policies being deregulated at an extremely worrying scale, deforestation being on the rise. Many of the coal districts as well, which are in which there's mining going on at full speeds, are amongst the hottest districts. So we are looking at Wardha and Chandrapur in Maharashtra, which are seeing amongst the highest temperatures, or Angul in Odisha. These are places that are providing coal for to keep the nation's lights on and air conditioners on. So these places are seeing the worst fallout of that environmental justice.
Which policies worry you the most?
For now, I mean, which policies worry me the most? Of all policies, I've focused over the many years on the lack of consent and consultation of local communities, especially indigenous communities who live around these mines and live in these forests, and especially for coal mine expansion. So if you're not giving the people directly impacted a chance or a voice to be able to be heard or to be able to exercise their consent, that those have seen significant rollbacks in laws around consultation and seeking people's consent. And for a lot of public sector mine companies as well, they are not obliged to, and they can use eminent domain powers to acquire land for coal mining.
Right. Madura, I see you nodding along with what Aruna was saying. And also, let me put this to you. I mean, this is a statistic from the International Energy Agency, which says that with a population of more than 1.3 billion, of course, in India, the energy needs are set to rise more than any other nation over the next 20 years. So given the nation's heavy dependence on it, does a coal-free future seem a long way off to you?
I don't think that a coal-free future is a long way off. Just to sort of reiterate some of the points that were made, at least in terms of India's first NDC commitments in 2015 of 40% of non-fossil fuel capacity, we've already met that in as of April 2022. The future is basically looking at 450 gigawatts of renewables and 500 gigawatts of clean energy by 2030. And if this target is met, we're looking at basically anywhere of between 60 to 65% of non-fossil fuel-based generation in electricity alone. And India is also committed to coal phase down. Is this going to be easy? Definitely not. But I do see the share of coal reducing. And I think the current situation and the volatility that we are seeing in the coal market, both in terms of prices and the supply disruptions, make it even a stronger case just from an energy security perspective, but also from India's multiple objectives of development, growth, affordability to invest much more and faster in renewables. They are cheaper from an electricity point of view. They are cheaper. New renewables are cheaper than most sort of coal-based power generation, as well as particularly newer pipeline that is coming online. Year-on-year additions in renewables have also been significant. But there is a lot that needs to be done, particularly in this decade, to be able to try and move away from coal and reduce our reliance.
I mean, I think everyone agrees with you that there is indeed a strong case to be made. But then let me ask you a different question. Do you think that the Indian authorities are up to this challenge? Is there the political will to do so?
I think there's definitely a political will to increase renewables. There can be, I think, some harder decisions that need to be made on the extent of coal that is there in the sector, and particularly when we look at a new pipeline, under construction pipeline or pre-construction pipeline. I think that is something that needs to be re-looked at given the level of volatility that we are seeing. Even with higher power demand projections, I think investing in cleaner solutions would be much better. There are a lot of policies in place that are looking at it, but there are also a few mixed signals. So I think there will be a need to relook at some of these policy decisions and hopefully bet on a cleaner and less coal-reliant future.
Roxy, so, you know, with a rapid growing population and, as we've been saying, an economy that's heavily dependent on coal, emissions in India are set to climb quite high. What's at stake, do you think, if action is not taken to curb them?
Yeah, so the discussion so far has been on mitigation. Of course, the mitigation is the most important factor here because whether Wherever you emit the wherever you have carbon emissions, the impact is felt mostly on the tropical regions, especially on the vulnerable part, like regions like South Asia. And one of the way to work on it is on local adaptation. And how do we work on local adaptation? Through early warning systems. So if you look at the mortalities due to heat waves during the last several decades, the heat waves have increased and so have the mortalities. But if you look at the last few years, since 2017, the mortalities in the India-Pakistan region have actually gone down. This is from the most recent report from the World Meteorological Organization, the WMO. And one of the reasons is they have incorporated the early warning systems and the heat wave forecast, which has been coming out frequently since 2017 or 2015, and incorporated them in the national disaster management plans. So some of the states, I would say some of the states have a heat action plan for this March, April, May, or early June period, where they have policies to you know, provide bulletins on heat waves and temperature forecasts. Yeah, so this comes in maybe 3 or 5 days ahead of the heat waves that is coming up, and there are quick actions, quick fixes. But we shouldn't stop at these quick fixes. Of course, forecasts have improved, but we cannot do a lot in these 3-4 days of forecast. We cannot wait for every year for forecasts to come and act accordingly for heat waves or floods, because there are many other things in stakes. For example, if you don't have policies in place, the number of working hours is lost. Many farmers, when compound events happen with drought and heat waves work together, they lose their working hours, they lose their agriculture as well. So we need
So what you're talking about,
long-term,
right? So just for the sake of time, I'll jump in there. What you're talking about right now is more how India adapts to the issues of climate change. Over to Mumbai, and let me bring in Aruna for the final word from you. Talk to us about what you've seen in terms of adaptability, and has India done enough so far?
Right now, heat waves, in terms of they're not listed as a disaster, which means that lots of states cannot get central relief funds, especially in heat affected areas. Only upon a few conditions can states actually declare them as local disasters. So there, in terms of being able to adapt to it or set in place a sort of plans, yes, there are states and there are cities that have their own heat action plans, for instance, Ahmedabad, but these are also cities that are seeing like a vast amount of deforestation within them and trees being cut and very poor forest cover. So yes, there is definitely a need. For instance, I live in Bombay, which has the urban heat island effect is intense here because there is so much built up area and so little green space that people are pushed and have very few options. People like me can insulate ourselves by having 24 hours of power and living in high rises. But this is definitely something that now Mumbai has its own climate change action plan. And it's up to state leaders to see how they actually implement them while also pulling off, you know, massive development and construction projects at the same time. There's also a need. I mean, like most, like many stories point out to how only 10% of actual heat-related deaths get reported as heat strokes. Now, that's something as well as looking at creating the sort of public health infrastructure to deal with both more pandemics that will arrive at our door and definitely increasing heat. So there is much, much more to be done, especially in terms of protecting green as well as blue infrastructure, both in cities and otherwise, and at the same time, not failing standing forests.
My apologies. 20 seconds to Madhura. Is this a wake-up call, do you think, for India?
It is something that we need to now take into account. These are not anomalies. This is going to be more frequent going ahead.
Right.
And hence, it is important for us to see how we can try and shift focus both for mitigation and adaptation.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us. Aruna Chandrasekh and Roxy Matthew Cole and Madhura Joshi, thanks for joining us. Thank you for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, you can always go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJ Inside Story. Join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is AJ Inside Story. For myself and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for watching. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you.